All right, welcome back to Earn Your Hunt Podcast. I am here with my buddy Garrett Rosh, right?
Rosh, that's right.
Rosh. Sounds like Rash.
Everyone pronounces it wrong, but it's all good.
Yeah, well, you guys know my normal strategy with a podcast is solo, but I can't. I don't know. We got a 6-hour drive here back to Kansas. We've had a hell of a trip, so we thought we'd jump on, talk a little shit. We had some crazy shit happen to us, per the usual, with my dumbass on a trip. But yeah.
We have one hell of an adventure. How many days has it been now?
I think today's eight or nine for sure. I left on Monday last week, and it's Wednesday.
It's been a blur. We've literally been balls to the wall since you got here.
Oh, yeah.
Running on about, 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night.
Well, dude, that's how we roll. Like, that's, every time I hunt with you, it's the exact same way. Every time, like, Africa, same thing. I was in a coma on the flight home from Africa because we hunted for, 24 hours straight.
Yeah, we literally, we hunted all night, the last night, just so you could sleep on your flight home. Literally hunted till 4 a.m., came back, an hour out, half asleep, got up, hunted that morning, and you guys,
got out of there.
Took you back to the airport in Johannesburg.
Honestly, that was the best thing I've ever... That was the best idea, because I slept for, 13 of the 15 hour... 14 of the... I woke up, and I had an hour and a half left in the flight. I think it's a 16-hour flight, so...
Makes that flight go by a hell of a lot quicker.
We've had a couple of them nights on this
we
one.
We have.
All right, well, just tell people who you are, and then we can go into the bullshit session. This is the normal... I am not... Just a disclaimer. You guys know I'm not a normal fucking host. I'm a moron, and I don't know how to ask questions, so we'll just kind of yammer through this. But the normal guys would say, tell the folks about yourself.
Well, so I run an outfitting business called Name the Game Outfitters. I'm based out of Oklahoma, but you guys kept up with me at all. You know that I guide, hell, just about everywhere. Three states I got in the most, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Texas, but I do antelope, elk, and mule deer in New Mexico, do alligators in Louisiana and Florida, do some hunts in Argentina, red stag, dove hunts, and then obviously we do our Africa hunts, as well. We got stuff scattered all over the place, and, hell, pretty much keeps me busy year round.
Yeah, dude, you're like one of the few outfitters I know that I can just call you and be like, hey, do you got a, you got, how about this fucking animal? Oh, yeah, I got a spot.
Just about any species across the United States or, hell, pretty much any other country. Oh, yeah, Mexico, too. I forgot about that. Mexico and Canada. We do bear hunts in Canada, desert mule deer, coos, golds, oscillated, desert bighorn, and Mexico as well. So, yeah, pretty much anything. Anything you could potentially want to go after, hell, I can hook you up. It makes it a little easier not being married and not having kids to be able to run rampant all over the country nonstop and hardly ever be home. But hell, I wouldn't have it any other way.
How just before we get into this trip and the bullshit, tell them how you got started doing this, because it's not. Most outfitters start with they've got a piece of land or they lease some stuff,
right,
and they focus on whitetails, mule deer, right, antelope, or whatever's in that area. But how did you get started with the Name the Game and branching out into different stuff?
Honestly, man, it's it started at a young age. You know, growing up, my grandpa, I would say he's pretty much the one that influenced me to want to not only hunt everything but travel, you know, all around the country and all around the world. Because that's what he did. You know, he went after his super slam in North America, and actually he's only one animal away right now. I think all he's got left is his woodland caribou.
Wow.
So, he's getting up there in age, but I think he's gonna go ahead and try to finish it. I think he's in his upper 70s now. But he's the one that pretty much influenced me at a young age to want to hunt everything. You know, when we grew up, I mean, hell, starting at 3-4 years old, you know, we, no matter what season it was, that's what we were hunting. You know, whether it was gigging bullfrogs or squirrels, rabbits, deer, hogs, turkeys, it didn't matter. You know, whatever season it was, we were going after them. That's, that's kind of how I grew up with my dad and grandpa. So it's like, I knew, you know, throughout growing up, obviously I was the one grandson that was more obsessed with it than any of the others. So obviously, I think everyone kind of knew I was gonna go above and beyond just, you know, hunting on the weekends. So as I got older, you know, I'd say when I was 13, I started working on my uncle's ranch. He ran a hog hunting ranch. So I started out skinning, caping, quartering on the ranch. Well, I did that for about 2 years, and then I think by the time I was 14 or 15, I started guiding clients. And so I kind of knew at that young age that's what I wanted to do. You know, that's what I wanted to do full time. And so I started guiding part time throughout, you know, high school on some turkeys and hog and deer hunts, and then went and played college baseball for 4 years. And then after I graduated college, I came back home and started guiding again and got back into it immediately. And probably after a year, you know, after I built my clientele up to where I felt comfortable quitting my job. I was a pipe fitter for a short period of time while I was guiding part-time. Got to the point where I was missing more work than I was. I was doing more hunting than I was pipe fitting. But anyway, so I quit after about a year, built my clientele up, and went into it full-time and never looked back. And pretty much from there on out, I mean, it just got crazier and crazier every year. It seemed like every year that went by, I just started guiding for more species and more places across the country as I made more connections. And just every year since then, not only has it gotten bigger clientele wise, but it seems like it's broadened my areas as far as where I guide. You know, it's now it's like I don't really think there's a place that I don't have a connection as far as species go. I mean, just about any species across the United States or around the world, I've got a place for you. And everywhere I guide or book clients, it's a place I've hunted before. So, you know, I'll never send a client to a place where, you know, I don't know how they run their operation. That's just not how I operate. So anywhere I book or guide for, you know, I've been there before hunting to know that they run a first-class operation, that you're going to have a successful hunt. So that's kind of how I run my operation. Anyone's ever coming hunting with me, and Jake knows this, if you don't kill, you'll come back for free. I mean, I run 100% on just about everything I guide. Deer, turkeys, I mean, really everything. You know, I feel like if someone pays that money for a hunt, they deserve the opportunity, you know? So,
yeah, dude, you I've only been on a few hunts with you. I mean, we've only been friends for, I mean, we've been, chatting friends on Instagram for longer than that, but it, you know, last summer was the first time. I mean, I was on a mountain in Canada or Alaska hunting bears, and you're like, "Hey, man, if you ever want someone to go with you on one of those, let me know." And I said, "Hey, you do the same, bud." And you're like, "Hey, you want to go to Africa in a month?" And I was like, "Fuck yeah,
Jake,
I do."
Jake's about the only son of a bitch I can think of that you could ask if he wants to go to Africa in less than a month, and he says yes and makes it happen. But hell yeah, we had a damn good time. You guys came over for what, 6 days?
Yeah, we only had a I wish I would have went longer, but it was just so packed.
But
know?
We had a lot of shit to achieve in 6 days. 6 days, you guys killed what, 14, 15 animals?
Yep.
I think your wife Lana shot five with her compound. You shot 9 or 10 with your recurve.
Yeah.
We had a lot of shit to achieve. You know, Cape Buffalo, anything from Plains game to Cape Buffalo. Hell, we knocked it all out. But I know we still got more to achieve on your next Africa trip.
Oh yeah, dude. I'm gonna go back. It was, well, and that's what I was gonna say. I mean, we've only hung out, I've only been on a few trips with you, and we on each one of them, we've been, except for the one deer hunt with my daughter that we just kind of got unlucky. It was not the ranch just wasn't quite set up.
That particular ranch, I've ran a bunch of rifle hunts on in the past, and you know, it's always been a good setup for rifle hunts. Well, you know, my ranch manager out there, he thought he had it set up the right way for bow hunts, and then we got there, and as we tell, he wasn't experienced at bow hunting as he said he was.
Well, so, yeah, and they were fighting the drought and everything else.
Yeah,
the
drought situation didn't help. We had a bad drought down there, so the deer numbers and the quality of the bucks were already pretty, you know, down. And I had actually already rescheduled a couple guys on that particular ranch due to that, just because the quality was down so bad. But now it looks like it's going to bounce back this next year, and hell, it worked out anyways, because now you and your daughter are going to come back and hunt Oklahoma with me this season,
which so. that's I'm excited about that. And she was able to kill a Rio and oh yeah, dude,
it was still a fun hunt.
It was worth, I guess in this roundabout way, what I was trying to get at is I've shot a lot of animals with you on a few hunts, so it's...
Yeah, hell, in 1 year, we've killed a lot of shit together.
That's right. It's been good. I actually... What's funny is... Anybody who listens knows I'm a huge Fred Eichler fan. And I actually remember on one of the seasons seeing you on the show. Like, it was one of those ones where he had just met you. You look like a fucking child.
probably because I was.
Yeah, I mean.
I don't even think I had facial hair then. But no, me and Fred, we met at a bow shop in Oltmogee, Oklahoma. Actually, I was 14 years old. And me and a few buddies were there, and we were getting a couple bow fishing arrows because we were going bow fishing on the lake we live on back home. And hell, we didn't even know Fred and Michelle were going to be in there. They were in there signing autographs, taking pictures with people, and it was getting close to the time when they were closing. And we were getting our arrows, and we run into Fred, and we're kind of bullshitting back and forth with him. Well, long story short, we were about to head out, and he asked what we were doing that night. And hell, we told him, you know, we were going bow fishing. We have a lake that we bow fish on a lot at the house, And so, one thing led to another, and we ended up inviting him out. And hell, if you know Fred, you know that hell, he's down. If he's able to make it, he's down for just about anything. So, he ended up loading up, him and his cameraman Michelle, and they came out and bowfished with us all night. We shot the shit out of them. I mean, I think we ended up shooting over 100 fish that night, a bunch of carp, gar, and we bowfished till daylight, and then we took them back to the airport that morning. Hell, they didn't get any sleep. And then ever since that night, we kept in touch, and we've been good buddies ever since. I mean, after that year, seemed three or four times a year, he'd come down and hunt with me, you know, whatever it was, deer, turkey, squirrel, ducks, geese. And then I would always go up there a couple times a year and you know, hunt with him, whether it was, you know, elk, whitetails, muleys, turkeys, just about everything. So we've been really good buddies ever since. And that's kind of how it led into with Jake. Whenever me and him met, we're gonna try to get these two on a hunt together. Maybe this year. Maybe we can get Fred and Cam with us during deer season.
I hate even admitting this, but Garrett got him on the phone, and we were bullshitting back and forth, and I didn't want to tell him I was a fucking, you know, 14-year-old stalker, you know, like as if he was the fucking the fucking vampire or some shit off of some I don't know, man. I just didn't want to fucking let on that I was a bit of a stalker. But
we can't make that son bitch's head any bigger.
I know, no shit. Well, I was hoping he'd come out and hunt with us because he's trying to do his single season slam for like the 18th fucking time.
Yeah. Oh, he needs his Rios. I think actually he was gonna do it, but our season opened up a little later this year, so I think he's going to come out in about a week, try to get his Rio kill, the recurve.
Yeah, I sent my wife a message, and I said, just talked to Fred Eichler on the phone, and I'm trying not to make it seem like it's a big deal. Yeah, you guys know I'm a fucking moron. I just do whatever. But anyway, that doesn't matter. But the reason that I'm doing this, or that I did this, that I wanted to, I've always wanted to do a single season slam. You know, I love hunting turkeys, but I'm not the guy that's going to travel for turkeys like every year. Like I'll go like to closer states, but you know, flying down to Florida, like I'll use that money to go hunt something else. Like I love hunting turkeys, but I'm not the guy that's going to just constantly go. I'm not saying I won't do it again, but you know what I mean?
But for the most part, you're going to spend your money on big game.
Exactly. But I always wanted to do this, the single season slam, and because I watched a DVD of Fred, and that was what he did. That one time he went and knocked him out all out in one season. I was like, God, that would be fucking cool. So I've always thought that was going to, the way I was going to do it. So this year, finally, I just asked Gary, I was like, hey, I know you guide for... all these, you know, he just figured it out. I mean, I was like, what do we need to do to get the, you know, Eastern and the Rio and kind of a combo hunt and then do the Osceola and win. And so that's how we operated it. So I went down to Florida. Did you guide in? Okay. Tell people how long you were in Florida. So, or yeah, how your season started.
Yeah, so I was in Florida for about a month. You know, that's typically where I start my turkey season, obviously, just because it opens up earlier than everywhere else. So I was there. We started, obviously, in the south zone because it opens up the earliest. So we started in the south zone, knocked all of our clients out there, did our youth hunt. And then the north zone opened, and obviously that's what you came for.
That's where I was at.
And so you came early in the north zone, and actually we had a bunch of clients booked up there. I was there with my buddy Casey. Me and him got together there in Florida, and then and we had about 60 clients booked this year. I know that sounds like a lot, but we got a lot of property down there. So I stayed down there till we had. I think when I left, we had killed 45. So they had. They had about, whatever, 15 or 17 birds left to kill after I left. Which I'm glad I left at 45, because that's when shit starts getting tough. The birds start getting pressured. They get a little decoy shy, call shy. And, hell, you start having to hunt them like deer. And obviously, if you're a turkey hunter, you know that shit's not very much fun. It's a lot more fun when they interact with decoys and calling. But, no, it was good. We knocked... We ran 100% success and knocked all of our clients out. And when Jake come, actually, you know, we were after a particular bird. It's a big bird. A couple of the guys that tried to kill him with a shotgun ended up not working out. But so I told Jake it may be a tough bird to kill, but as luck would have it, we ended up killing him on day one. But it wasn't the easiest hunt.
We got lucky on that deal. I mean, it all worked out, but that fucker did not want to. He was trying to high step around the fucking decoy.
He did. He gave us some shit. He came in with a few hens. Then we were kind of set up on a pinch point between these two canals to where really the furthest he could get away from us was about 20 yards if he wanted to walk through that pinch point.
Yeah.
So, and we set the decoy at what? Probably 12 yards?
Yeah,
it was
probably like 12 yards.
Well, he did. He skirted the hell out of the decoy. And yeah. He was high stepping past us trying to get the hell out of there. And Jake was ready, but I cut at him a few times, get him to stop, and Jake drew back at 20 yards and just fucking 12-ringed him. Yeah, hell of a shot.
Yeah, on a turkey, that's fucking rare. But, that was an experience for me, just being in Florida. And I mean, I've already kind of talked about that trip on here, but that I wanted to kind of go over that because, you know, if a guy wants to do a slam or finish a slam or whatever, I think, what is the deal? Like, so the farther south you get, the more pure the birds get, right? I mean, there's a line there where they can be.
They always say, like, that Orlando area is kind of the cutoff line, okay. You know, give or take, to where you could potentially get a hybrid, you know, an Osceola mixed with an Eastern. So, you know, obviously if you want to avoid that, you stay further south. You know, we're kind of based around that Okeechobee area. So, you know, all of our birds are pure Osceolas, which obviously, you know, that's kind of what you're going for. If you're going after your slam, you'd rather not get a hybrid between an Eastern and an Osceola.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
especially paying the money that you're paying, because, you know, Osceolas are typically your most expensive bird anyways, because Florida's the only place you can kill them. So, I would always stay a little further south to where you don't, you know, jeopardize getting a hybrid or potentially even shooting an Eastern, you know?
Yeah, dude, I can't hardly tell the difference between all of them. I mean, I'm getting a little better, but, so on this trip, this was, so really, let me just give you a little background on why we ended up throwing an axis deer in the middle of this fucking trip, because, so I had, Brian Broderick had asked me if I wanted to go on a Neil Guy hunt, and it was a meat hunt, like, we were just gonna go down guns a-blazing. That's right. The owner of a fucking arrow company invited me on a rifle hunt. What a douche. He doesn't listen to this shit anyway. See, it's all good. But I wanted the meat. And it just, the way it was going to work out, it was over Easter weekend. And I was going to have to, like, drive to, because I wanted to, me and Garrett wanted to do our turkey hunting early, before any shotguns come in, you know, do it, and that's how you operate.
And that's typically, like I said, if I got archery hunters booked, whether it's compound or recurve, traditional, you know, I always book all my archery hunters early, just because I'd rather hunt non-pressured birds when it comes to bow hunting.
Absolutely.
Makes life a hell of a lot easier, so I get all my bow guys knocked out before we start coming in knocking out of shotgun hunters.
Yeah, so we it wasn't going to work out. I was going to be gone. Well, I've been gone for a bit, but I was going to be gone for like 2 full weeks if I did it that way. But I really did want that meat, so I asked Garrett. I was like, this was last minute. I was like, hey, man, do you think we could find a place to shoot an axis deer? And he's like, yeah, I'll figure it out. And I told him, you know, I just want the meat, but I want to, you know, I want to shoot it with my bow. So he asked if I'd be good with high fence, which I'm not against high fence. If I'm going after, you know, the full experience, I want it. I just feel better if it's free range. But anyway, so
we were on a hell of a time.
We were on a hell of a time crunch.
With starting, you know, obviously we started our journey in Kansas after obviously the Florida situation was knocked out. We started our journey in Kansas on this trip. Met you in Kansas. Worked out the Eastern in one day. Well, actually one morning, 30 minutes into the first morning, roosted the bird, worked out perfect.
You had that bird roosted and...
It worked out absolutely perfect. Bird comes with the decoys, Jake 12 rings his ass, but the footage, I mean, if you've kept up with Jake's page or my page, you've seen the footage to see how badass the footage was. That Eastern took that arrow like a fucking champ.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like it.
I haven't either.
And
it was absolutely incredible. He comes in, fighting the Jake decoy, 12 ring his ass, and acts like he wasn't even hit. Just shrugs the arrow, and he's hit perfectly, and he keeps fighting until literally he gets lightheaded and snow plows into the ground. I'm telling you, I watch a lot of turkeys get killed, and I've yet to see shit like that.
It's probably a good way to go. Like, he didn't even know. He just thought he got spurred by that other bird.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It pissed him off because he thought the other bird was fighting him when he got hit. So yeah. He just kept fighting back, and then, you know.
That was awesome. I mean, when we went and set up, It was a perfect setup.
It was.
I mean,
it worked out good because we knocked out your Eastern early, which worked out good for us because it bought us a little bit of time. And we stuck around that evening, caught like between me and you and my guides that were fishing with us, I think we caught, 110 crappie?
Yeah.
So we caught a bunch of crappie that evening on our little private pond we got that we typically take our clients to after they tag out. And tore up the crappie that evening, then we... Got it the next morning. It was opening morning of shotgun season, and went and killed a few birds that morning, and yep. Jake tagged along with us, so that was cool. And then after that, we hauled ass down to
your house.
I guess it's back to my house.
Yeah, we went to your house.
Stayed at my house for a night because I had to regroup because I've been gone for over a month in Florida. I drove straight from Florida to Oklahoma for Oklahoma youth season. And got the youth hunters knocked out, and then drove straight from. Actually, I had to drive 24 hours. I put myself in a little bit of a bind. My damn compressor in my truck went out in Florida, so I left Florida a little later than I expected. So I had to drive 24 hours throughout the night to meet my clients. I didn't sleep at all. Made it just in time to meet them at camp in Oklahoma at 5:30 a.m. to take two youth hunters out. Got them tagged out, and then jumped in the truck again, hauled ass to meet Jake in Kansas. Got his bird knocked out, and then we went back to my place in Oklahoma, regrouped for a night, ate dinner there. I did a little bit of laundry because, shit, I hadn't cleaned any clean clothes because I haven't taken time to do any laundry. So stayed there for one night, got up the next morning, hauled ass to Texas, and that's where we got into the Axis situation.
And the fucking psychos situation. Yeah. Dude, I've never been involved, like... There's a special human being down there in Texas. I've never experienced anything like it.
Well, you know, my buddy, you know, I've got four or five ranches I typically guide clients on in Texas, you know, and some of them high fence, some of them free range, depending upon what the client wants. And, you know, but, and each ranch is places I've guided at a lot, so I know what to expect. I know it's quality hunt, a quality access, no issues whatsoever, you know, depending upon what the client wants, whether he wants a free-range archery hunt or a free-range rifle hunt, or he wants high fence, it doesn't matter. But I knew we had about a day and a half, 2 days to get it done with a recurve. And if anyone's hunted an axis, they know how tough axis can be, whether, you know, it's with a bow or a gun. They're smart bastards. So I told Jake, I said, hey, you know, if we want to get an axis buck killed in a day and a half, we're probably going to need to hunt high fence, you know, just because of the time situation.
Well,
and we needed a guy that had been, you know, corn in these axes, and actually we needed a ranch that where they weren't pressured. Even it being high fence doesn't mean it's a walk in the park. It's not. And Jake knows that.
I've only hunted high fence a couple times, and the one place was the most brutal. Like the animals would come out like 150 yards away and then disappear because they knew you were there. I mean, it was the most pressured fucking place I've ever seen because they were used to those areas.
So I got a hold of my one of my guides that works for me and said, hey, you know, find, because we were tied up guiding turkey. I said, hey, find me a place where we can kill, you know, an axis buck in a day and a half with a recurve. He said, well, I've got a place. He said, you know, I've got a place. I've hunted before. He says, this guy is going to be a bizarre character. He said, it's going to be like no one you've ever met before, but it's non-pressured. And the guy, you know, he feeds them in the same area every day. So I think, you know, you and Jake should be able to get there, get an axis buck knocked out in a day and a half, 2 days. I said, okay, we'll give it a shot. And so that's, you know, that's the first time I've ever went into a place blind. But so I was just going off my guy's word. And anyways, it turned out to be one hell of an adventure.
You know, I mean, what pissed me off the most is the first thing he did was tell us that he had, you know, he'd been feeding these axis deer in front of the blind. Like I said, this was a meat gathering mission. Of course, I wanted to, you know, shoot it with my bow just because it was, I love that adrenaline rush. I love that trigger time, you know, it's good practice. I just wanted to do it. I could just go shoot one of these fuckers in the head and put it in the freezer, but that wasn't really, I wanted both aspects, but I really wanted the meat. That was the whole point, right. So it didn't really matter. But when we got there, you know, the guy had been telling us that he'd been baiting right in front of the blind. Well, we get there and he's like, yeah, I just set this blind up today.
Well, yeah, you know,
he
originally told me and Sean, my guide, that he'd been feeding these axes every day, 12, 15 yards from the blind, obviously just prepping it for.
Yeah, you told him not to go past 20 yards.
Right, we never told him to go past 20 yards, and so we're thinking, hell yeah, you know, as long as everything goes according to plan, you know, we may get a shot the first or second set. You know, that's what we're hoping for, right? And so we got there, and literally we're unloading our shit at camp, and. Yeah, we already kind of gathered this guy's got a little bit of a fucking screw loose, but we you know, whatever, we were fine with it. We just wanted to get in there and get our axes killed, and long story short, he tells us, he got that blind set about an hour before we got there, so we're looking at each other like, what the hell? And I know axes well enough that typically an axis, if you've been feeding them in one area, you throw a blind up an hour before you hunt them, they ain't going to tolerate it. And I'm not saying that they're not going to walk 50, 60 yards from it, but getting them in 10, 12 yards for a shot with a recurve probably is not going to happen.
Yeah.
Until, you know, at least they've had 4, 5, 6 days to get used to that blind being there.
Yeah, that was a little frustrating, but that's not why this guy was so weird. Like, I just told my wife, I was like, this guy is seriously wearing me out. I don't even, and she said, why? I said, you remember that scene in Talladega Nights where Ricky Bobby's like, I'm the best there is. I piss excellence. I'm not shitting you. It was that 24/7. This guy never let us talk.
It was bad.
We never said a fucking word.
He never even asked a question about us.
He never asked a fucking question. Like after 2 days, Garrett said something about being an outfitter. And he's like, oh, I didn't know you were an outfitter. Like, what in the fuck? No wonder you're. So anyway. I wish I could go on about this guy, and I'll tell you right now, if you keep listening to this podcast, I'm going to keep thinking of shit to say, to tell you stories about this guy. But that's, just imagine somebody that sits for 45 minutes and says the craziest shit, like, you want me to call the King of Malaysia? You want me to call the Pentagon? I'll call the Pentagon right now. I know him.
The guy has done everything. And not only has he done everything, he's done everything better than you have.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's probably got, 15, 20 world records?
Every year.
Everyone he knows is famous. Every one of his friends are famous. They're Olympic athletes or gold medalists, whatever the hell he said. But I'm talking, I've met some arrogant bastards. I've never met anyone quite like that.
It wasn't even almost arrogance. It was almost like just definitely something off with the guy, but it wasn't like he was normal. He just never quit talking about himself. I mean, but I'll just tell you. Okay, I got to tell you this. I'll read it. This text message is what I sent to my wife. I'm sitting in the truck. I've been reading this to fucking everybody on this trip.
I think you were sitting in the side-by-side while I was getting the gate.
Garrett was getting the gate, and this guy says this to me. And I literally wrote it down word for word and sent it to my wife because I got to remember this shit just so I can tell her what, you know, explain to her what this guy is like. Hang on. Hey, bear with me. I'm almost there. God, where? Okay. All right, here it is. I said, okay, he turns to me in the buggy and he goes, "I'm the most badass bow hunter of the world. I've killed pretty much every animal in the world just walking around with my bow." And then he just segues, "No fucking, I was special forces, better than Navy SEALs. We pulled the Navy SEALs out of the shit, you know, man?" That's exactly what he fucking said to me. And I wrote it down. And I, like, everything this guy said to me, I had to, like, bite my lip not to fucking burst into laughter. It was bizarre beyond.
The entire time, me and you could literally never look at each other because we would start laughing because of the bizarre shit that would come out of this guy's mouth 24/7.
Dude, we were hiding in our rooms. We each had our own rooms. Oh, yeah, like, I would text you.
After dinner, we would listen to him for 30 to 45 minutes, him and his wife. His wife was pretty, I mean, it was pretty rough listening to her, yeah, too, but she wasn't as bad as he was.
No, she was just an oversharer. She'd share, like...
Like, yeah, we'd be trying to eat dinner, and she'd just stand over your shoulder and talk to you the entire time, and you could even chew. But, but no, this guy, he literally talked to us about himself for about 45 minutes every night. We'd never literally say anything, but yep, okay. And then finally, we would catch a break long enough. We're like, all right, well, we're going to go to bed now. Me and Jake wouldn't say a word to each other. I'd go up to my room. He'd go to his room. And the next day, we wouldn't even walk out of each other's room. We'd be texting each other from our room saying, hey, let me know. Jake would text me and say, hey, let me know when you're coming down the stairs. And I ain't walking out to talk to this bastard until you're down here.
it was special. But at the end of it, so the second day after we sat in the blind and he told us that the axis deer were seeing us move.
Yeah, I texted him and said, hey, man, I said, this blind situation ain't going to work. I said, look, we've seen some bucks and does, but I said, they're not spooking off the blind. They're just uneasy about it. They know it's something new, obviously.
That's just normal.
Yeah, it's just normal. I said, you know, it hadn't been here long enough for them to get used to feeding next to it. So obviously they're not going to come feed 15, 20 yards from it. It's just not going to happen. So I was like, I really think we need to go put up a tree stand. There's a meadow kind of back there behind the lodge that these axes come into every evening, and they're comfortable coming in there. They haven't been hunted right there. So I said, me and Jake talked about it, and we said, we need to get a tree stand up in that meadow and try to catch them walking that field edge and try to get a shot, you know? And obviously, if we put a tree stand up, you can throw a tree stand up and hunt it the same day, and hell, you know, the axes aren't going to notice it. So we thought, hey, that's going to be our best chance to be able to get it done in the next, you know, two sets. Because that's what we were down to.
Yeah.
Two hunts.
Yep.
Yeah. So we set it up that day, midday. Before that, he texted me back and says, hey, we can do that if you want, but the reason why the axes aren't getting close enough to the blind is because we're getting spotted. And me and Jake, we already actually talked about it, and we figured that's what he would say just because that's how he is. But yeah, he texted back and said, hey, you guys are getting seen out of the blind. Oh, we got the entire blind blacked out. And the few screen windows we had opened, we had the camo screen. I mean, literally, you cannot see into the blind. I mean, no. You can get out and look into the blind. You can't see anything in there. So, obviously, we already knew we weren't getting spotted. But
well, you and I have hunted out of a lot of blinds.
Well, clearly, we're not jackasses. We know how to hunt. So, it's not like we had all the windows open, moving around in there like dumbasses. But anyway, so he's like, all right, yeah, I guess we can do that. So, we go in midday after we eat lunch and put this tree stand together. And we get it stood up in this tree. Where these axes, you know, like to hang out. Actually, they like to hang out in that area. Actually, when we went in to put the tree stand up, there was axes bedded right there beneath the tree. We were planning on putting the tree stand in. And he'd been seeing them walk that tree line a lot almost every single evening. So, you know, we felt like if we could pull it off as far as the wind goes, not getting winded, that we could get this tree stand up and potentially get a shot that evening. So we went in there midday, put this tree stand up, and went back to camp. Took it easy for a few hours, and me and Jake got in there that evening. And as soon as we got in there, hell, we already talked about, like, shit, you know? We like the setup. It looks good. I mean, we got good cover. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen out of here. We knew the only negative is if something came in from our left downwind, obviously, you know, it would potentially screw the entire evening because you know how axes are. I mean, you're not going to get away with a wrong wind, not even a marginal wind.
I fucking hate them bastards.
Yeah, they're too damn smart. So, as luck would have it, we were in there for, what, 15, 20 minutes? I mean, yeah. It happened quick.
Yeah, it happened quick.
A doe and a fawn walks out, and they're kind of feeding on the field edge, and so we're sitting there thinking, hell yeah, it's a good sign. And they came out from the side we wanted them to come out, and they came out upwind, so we knew, like, hell, if they keep funneling out this way, we're in good shape. But we look up, and the number one target buck we were actually in there to try to kill, he was actually one of the bucks that was hardhorn, and actually he was one of the bigger bucks he had on camera.
He's one of the ones that we were allowed to kill. That was another thing. We got there and he's like, well, you can't kill this one, you can't kill.
Oh, yeah, he had a bunch of bucks in velvet and they weren't finished out growing, so he didn't want us to shoot any velvet
which
bucks,
I get,
so,
but still, like, but fine.
It limited
with
us.
The recurve, it's
in a day and a half it was limited, you know, to what we could shoot. And hell, I mean, we only had, you know, a few bucks that we were able to shoot, so we're sitting there thinking, well, hell, we only got a day and a half to hunt, and to top it off, we only got a few bucks we can shoot.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got lucky. The number one buck pops out right behind those does, starts walking down the tree line straight towards us, and we're like, shit, you know, this may happen. Well, he comes right in, what, 10, 15 yards?
Yeah, 10, 12, 15 yards.
Stops to eat. Jake draws back, hammers him.
We thought.
We thought, anyways. I mean, hell, I was even filming it. We went back, looked at the footage. It literally looked like the arrow, like you tucked it in right behind the shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. We knew it was a little bit more forward than I would have liked, but still, like, I would have bet you money that was a hard shot. I never would have. And honestly, all of my friends said the same thing.
Everyone, me and you thought it was, you know, we thought it was done deal. I mean, we thought you tucked it in right beneath the shoulder, or right behind the shoulder, and it looked like you'd gotten plenty of penetration, so we weren't even doubting it.
I knew it went all the way through to the other side, and I'll tell you, I've had this happen one other time on a whitetail, and I think when an animal is loading to, when they're dropping, as they load, they're, and what I mean by that is their shoulders are coming back as they go down, and when that arrow hits, if it hits in that area, it kind of, it obviously slows your penetration, but it also pushes that arrow forward towards their towards the front of their chest. And I'm not shitting you, if it missed the heart by a cunt hair, I mean
literally,
like, you could take somebody's cunt hair and you could put it in there and it probably would have cut it, but not the heart. Like,
you barely missed that.
And it was buried in the offside shoulder. It wasn't like it come out his neck or even in front of the shoulder. We pulled the broadhead because as he ran, he snapped it off. And that's what I told you. It was only snapped off. The end of the arrow was probably like, what, 4 or 5 inches?
4 or 5 inches, yeah.
Of arrow broke off. So I was like, it didn't break on the entrance, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like I got 5 inches of penetration and it broke. That's not what happened.
Half the arrow was
it. So I said, I bet it buried in the other shoulder or a bone or whatever, and it snapped inside him and popped out, which is exactly what it did. Because I'm the smartest motherfucker on earth. You know, me and Eldon are pretty similar. We know shit.
Best bow hunter in the world.
Of course. Okay, so he says, the first thing he says when I showed him the video, and I'm telling you guys, okay, this is a forward shot, you know, right at the crease of the shoulder, and it's not even high. It's you know, at a downward angle, it's a perfect height.
Yeah, your up and down was good.
Yeah, it was perfect height. He goes, looks like high liver to me. I'm not shitting you. That's what he said.
This guy claims that the ranch he had previously, that they got at 1,800 clients a year.
A year? We
but
did.
In 1,800 clients a year, he still hadn't figured out where the fucking liver is on the animal. So, you know, liver's typically a mid-body, not right behind the shoulder. But he said that, you know, he thought it was a liver shot, which honestly made absolutely zero sense. Me and Jake look at each other like, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
I when he said that, I said, there's the liver's back by the fucking end of the rib cage. I was like, what? That doesn't even make sense. Go, oh yeah, yeah, okay.
Well, before that even, he picked us up and said, oh, I just knew this spot was going to work out. That's why I that's why I picked this tree. Yeah. Me and Jake look at each other and we're like, actually, me and Jake picked this tree. It was our idea to put the tree stand up here, but obviously, you know, he couldn't handle not taking credit for us getting a shot opportunity, right? Because we made the decision on his ranch and got it done, but he obviously had to take all the credit for it.
It was... Yeah, I mean, you guys probably think we're picking on this guy, but if you, it was a struggle to be around him.
If anyone met this guy, I promise you, you'd be pitching in right now.
Yeah, in the end, so just to tell you what we did, I mean, we looked hard. We blood trailed, but there wasn't a lot of blood, and if you hit, for one thing, I didn't hit any vitals, so there wasn't, it's not like the heart was pumping blood, but if you hit in that front shoulder and that scapula is covering your hole, you don't get a lot of blood anyway. I mean, a lot of times they'll bleed inside.
Right.
So anyway, we weren't getting a lot of blood. And this motherfucker, when we get there, he tells us, you don't have to worry about a bad shot. I got the best tracking dogs in Texas. Don't worry about it.
Basically, he said that whether he's alive or dead, it didn't matter. If he was dead, their dogs were going to find him. If he was alive, their dogs would bay it to where we could get another shot and finish them off.
Yep.
So we're thinking, okay, well, this is the perfect situation to go ahead and bring the dogs out, right? Well, he brings this 12-year-old dog out that was about the furthest away from a blood trailing dog in the world. Now, maybe back in the day, this dog used to be a bay dog, but, I mean, you had to trail something before you could even bay it.
So, well, and that's what I said, well, why isn't the dog following the blood? The blood's right here. And he goes, well, he doesn't track blood. I said, well, then what the fuck does he do? And he goes, well, he trails by sight. If he sees that fucker, he'll catch it. And I'm like, what the f... Okay, like, that's not going to do us any good. Like, at least... I don't know.
Yeah, we needed a blood dog. We didn't need a bay dog. But listen, if it was a bay dog that was able to trail, it'd be one thing. Not to mention this dog, I mean, I hate to say it, was on its last leg. I mean, it was on its back nine. So, I mean, I wouldn't have a whole lot of confidence in him baying this axis, even if he did see it, considering really old. But,
I make it a point to try not to get all worked. You know, in this podcast, I get worked up about a lot of things, and I bitch about, you know, installing fucking dishwashers and shit, because it's a pain in the ass. But I try not to get, like, too critical of outfitters, and I'll tell stories about, you know, funny shit that happens, because when guys go on a hunt, I want them to have some realistic expectations, and sometimes you just get a shitty ordeal.
Oh, 100%.
I would say
there's more bad outfitters than there are good ones.
Well, that's true, and I'm not ragging on, and I'll tell you, this guy, at the end of the whole deal, we looked until dark, couldn't find it. We gritted everything, and since he didn't have a fucking dog, I called my buddy Clay, who lived in the area, and asked him, and he got a guy, gave me his number. We got a hold of him. It was fucking Friday night. The guy was awesome. He came out. He's like, dude, it's a 50-50 deal. I don't know if it's going to work out. And we blood trailed. We tried. The dog just couldn't pick it up. I mean, between our scent around there and, you know, the amount of axis in that area and the lack of blood, it just didn't work out.
And we tried till 3 a.m.
3 a.m. Yeah. And then you and I and Elton. Okay, me and you and Elton got up early, and I'll give the guy credit. Like, he was with us till, and he's older. Like, I don't know how old he is, but he's got back problems.
Oh, listen.
And he gave, he did.
Me and you both agreed. Listen,
he did. He fucking worked at it.
He's a hard worker. he stayed with us and helped look for the axes just as much as we did. We gave him credit as far as that goes. He's a hard working old man. Yeah. But the guy just fucking wears you out. In the worst way possible.
It was kind of brutal. But we got up the next morning at 6 or 7 and got out again. And we ended up, and what I told Garrett, I was like, dude, look, I'm a terrible shot with a rifle. If we find this fucker alive, you shoot it. You know, we'll figure it out. But so I was like, we find Elton, and he's sitting on his four-wheeler, and he's got the gun up. And I'll tell you, folks, he's a sniper, and he told us that. He's a special forces sniper, And, I mean, he's 100% killed people at over a mile. So he's on the gun, and he's looking at these axis deer in these trees. And Garrett's like, he's got his finger on the trigger. He's going to shoot something. And he never did pull the trigger. So he comes back, and he finally sees us. He comes back, and me and Garrett go up. He goes around the outside of this tree belt. And me and Garrett get out, and we're walking. And when he's going around, these axes start coming towards us. And as they do, I see one jump up, and it limps. It's limping across towards the road. I said, dude, there he is. There he is. Garrett had the gun. Luckily, you had the gun. And you tell the story from there, because...
Yeah, so, like, the majority of the herd took out across the pasture. He circled around and tried to push him out to see if that wounded buck was in there. Well, Elton never did see him. He says he did, but he didn't.
No
so
way.
The whole herd takes off, hauls ass across the pasture. They get the hell out of there. Well, one buck jumps up at the very end, and obviously it was that wounded buck. You know, he couldn't keep up with the herd, so he jumps up. Well, he takes off running, and Jake thought he seen him limping. So he's like, hey, man, I'm pretty sure it's him. Well, I'd cranked my scope down to 3-power just because I was kind of watching the axis as they came through close, just making sure that wounded buck wasn't in there. Well, he takes off hauling ass down the road away from us. You know, at this point in time, you're just trying to break this axis down. He's wounded. Yeah. We just need to get him killed. So he's running directly away from us at probably 150 yards, and I try to shoot him right up the ass. I mean, we're just trying to put him down. Like I said, he's wounded, and we're running out of time here.
Yeah, so there's a hill there, too. You could only see half of it.
Right, there's a little bit of a knoll, and at 150 yards, I'm on 3-power, and I shoot at him running away. Well, I just miss him. So I rack another one in, and like I said, I'm still on 3-power, so this image looks like an ant to the scope. So finally, he stops about 200 yards, just long enough, turns broadside, and at this time, I see him limping. So we pretty much confirmed it's him. So he stops one more time before he's getting the hell out of there. Stops one time at 200 yards, turns back broadside, I rack another one in, free-handed, boom. Hammer him.
Dropped him.
Dropped him in his tracks, and obviously me and Jake are fired up, because at this point in time, you know, we've got a lot of time and a lot of miles invested trying to find this son of a bitch, and since Jake had shot it, I mean, we hadn't laid eyes on this bastard.
No.
Not once, until that next day. I mean, that son of a bitch had been avoiding us. So, even through tracking dog and covering miles and grid searching, I mean, we hadn't laid eyes on him since. So, to say we were excited was an understatement.
Yeah,
we were high-fiving, and, you know, at that point in time, you know, obviously it didn't end the way we wanted to. Obviously, you know, we'd have loved to trail it after Jake shot it and find it 100 yards from the tree stand, graveyard dead, heart shot. But, you know, it doesn't always work out that way.
It's literally game of inches. Like, if you look at the entrance wound and the exit wound of where it ended up,
You're talking an inch.
You're talking a literal inch. If you actually put it's an inch from the crease of the shoulder.
An inch to the right, he would have been heart shot. Probably went less than 100 yards, graveyard dead.
The thing is, I don't feel bad about the shot. Like, I've had to finish off, in the whole time I bow on it, I've probably finished off 4 animals with a rifle. It happens. If you hunt enough, it's gonna fucking happen. And I try as hard as I can not to have that. If I can stalk it, I will.
Well, like I
get
said,
another arrow in it.
No one wants to wound an animal.
No.
And obviously watch it suffer or anything like that. But, you know, the reality of it is, if you do enough hunting, it's gonna happen.
It's gonna happen.
All you can do is make the best of it and kill that animal as quickly as possible. And that's what we did. So we got the opportunity. We put him down with the rifle. We were excited to not only find them, but be able to, you know, salvage the meat. Hell, the meat was good.
Oh, that was the best part. Yeah,
hell, we were fired up. You know,
I didn't care that much about the rack. I mean, that's, you know, some trips, you know, I want both. This trip, the meat was a little more important to me.
One thing about an axis, I was like we talked about the other day. You know, at all the animals throughout the United States, that's the one animal I can understand why people just go kill for the meat, because the meat is that good.
Which, and I know people are out there going, why didn't you just shoot a doe? Well, I kind of set this up because I wanted to kill an axis buck as well. I mean, I've never killed an axis buck. But ultimately, from the story, what I want, and we did an autopsy. We pulled it apart, and the heart was fine. I have no idea. I'll be honest. That arrow went in, the broadhead went in vertically, that the vertical line was up and down for the broadhead, and it stuck in. I mean, maybe if it had went in sideways, it would have even been a different story. That's how close it was. And I'm not saying that because I'm like, oh, fucking, I made a good shot. I'm not whining about that. I'm just telling you that this is the kind of shit that happens. And 90% of people, and I know one of them, you guys know one of them, that fucking lies about it. Okay? I've seen him do it. I'm just saying that this shit happens.
Well, I think at the end of the day, people are going to respect someone a hell of a lot more for admitting their fuck-ups instead of hiding.
Well, and, you know, and what I'm saying? Like, exactly, it wasn't even a fuck-up, but, no, it, yeah, no, but you know what I mean. You know I know what you're saying.
Hell, you're talking an inch away from 12 ringing this out.
Absolutely.
But what I'm getting at is, like, it don't matter how much someone's... It don't matter how much shit you've shot. If you said you've never made a bad shot or missed,
you're lying.
You're just fucking lying, or you haven't done enough hunting.
Absolutely.
And that's just part of it. I mean,
well,
I mean, just like, you know, majority of our hunts we go on, you know, 90% of the time we're going to make a kill shot. But, you know, there's situations where it just, you know, you slip up and you make a bad shot. Not intentionally. It just works out that way. You know, obviously no one wants it to happen. But
well, and you know, I mean, you know, And I've told this story, my Cape Buffalo, I made a great shot, and that big bastard, that arrow hit that fucking rib and angled backwards, and that fucker was dead. He was maybe going to take a couple days to die, but he was one-lunged and part of the liver.
That's a tough son
of a bitch. It was a tough bastard, and they're huge. And what I'm saying, and I ended up having to put him down with a rifle, and I didn't want to. At all, like I want pure bow kills.
We fought to shoot the Cape Buffalo down to the last minute. But
and I will.
He was about to get into some brush. Remember, you and Tien's talked about it. Actually, the week previously, a guy shot a Cape Buffalo in there, and he got into this thick, nasty brush, and one of the trackers got gored.
Damn near killed. Yeah,
damn near killed him. So we talked about it. We said, hey, you know, Jacob, if he gets in this brush, it's going to be a bad deal. And we're probably not going to get him out, so that's when we took the rifle.
It's an inevitability with hunting, and it's always nice when it's a situation that where it's legal. I mean, in some states, it's not legal, you know, and you can't just go shoot your fucking deer at night. Josh Bomer, I'm sorry, did I say that out loud? Fuck, I'm going to have to edit that out. Just kidding, I don't edit shit. Oh my God, this thing says maximum recording time 60. Well, we might jump. We might just save this one and then jump back on here and finish this. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna stop this for a second, and then we are gonna jump back on and finish this baby out with the. Is there anything you want to talk about the axes? Did we forget anything?
No, I mean I feel like we pretty well covered it.
All I'll say is if you go axes hunting with Garrett, you're not gonna have to endure elk. Like me and Garrett are buddies, so he, you know, it's a different. We do things a little differently when he guides me. It's like, you know, we test some shit out sometimes. Oh, yeah. You know, it is what it is. But
you know, like we talked about, looking back on this whole experience from start to finish, starting in Florida to now, everything we set out to achieve, we achieved.
We
achieved,
yeah.
We encountered some bizarre shit. We met some bizarre people on the way, but hey, looking back at it now, one, it's funny. Yeah. Two, it was a hell of a memory.
Yeah, no, we'll be talking about Eldon for a long time. All right, folks, just a second. I'm going to jump right back on. All right, we're back. Let's finish this shit off so you guys can get your asses back to work. All right, we just finished up in Texas, and then we made the drive to your place in Oklahoma.
Did so we made it back to Oklahoma, and you know, we knew we had knocked out the tougher birds to begin with. I had a lot of confidence in the Rio, just because the Rios are typically pretty aggressive to decoys, and obviously as anyone who's hunted Rios knows that they're about the most vocal out of the four turkey species in North America. So you know, we knew we were gonna have fun with this one, and it was on my home place there in Oklahoma. So whenever Jake came in, I actually had another bow guy in camp, and another good client of mine, and a shotgun guy. So there was three of them hunting, obviously Jake, other guy that was shooting the compound, and then a shotgun guy. So, you know, I told Jake, you know, if since me and Jake had time to kill this last bird, you know, well, at the end of the day, we were gonna kill him no matter how long it took.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So my other two clients only had a day. What, they had a day and a half?
Yeah, they only had a day and a half.
Kind of close, and they had a day and a half to hunt because something came up with work, and they had to make it back home. So they told me, hey, you know, if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So we kind of made it a priority to make sure we get them tagged out. You know, ideally the first morning. So I told Jake, hey, we're going to put them in this spot where a bunch of birds been showing up every day. They hadn't been hunted, hadn't been pressured. So we set them up a ground blind, and I told him, I was like, yeah, I think we can pull a double in here because there's been three longbeards coming through here every single day. Hadn't been hunted, so they should come into a decoy. Yeah. First guy should be able to shoot it with a compound, and then hopefully the second client can pull up and shoot the second bird with a shotgun. Well, long story short, me and Jake went and set up on the other side of the property. Well, the three longbeards that were coming in over there ends up showing up over there by us. Well, obviously, we didn't want that to happen if we wanted to get these guys tagged out. So me and Jake had these three birds come in. Actually, we heard them gobbling around
story.
The corner.
Tell that story.
Me and Jake pick up the blind. We move. Well, we'd heard them gobbling all morning when they were henned up, so we couldn't pull them off the hens. Well, we decided we're going to move location, try to get a little closer where these birds were hanging out in the edge of this field. Well, we move closer. We get set up. Well, I tell Jake, the birds were gobbling. We knew they were probably, you know, 150 yards away max. So Jake's kind of finished getting set up with the blind, and we get the Newcomb blind set up, and I belly crawl out there to put the decoys out. You know, obviously trying to avoid to get spotted because I know these birds aren't far. Well, I just so much to get out there and get these decoys set up, and I look up and I see a tom pop out. I'm like, shit. So I'm trying to get this decoy in the ground. They start coming our way. Well, It's so
like
fucking dry.
Pavement.
Yeah, it's so dry in southwest Oklahoma because we haven't got any rain out there that it's like concrete. I can't get this fucking decoy stake in the ground. So I'm sitting there battling getting this decoy stake in the ground, and these three toms are strutting, coming right into us. And, you know, so I'm trying to figure out what to do, whether I just stay out there with the decoy. Well, if it had been a strutter, it would have been one thing because I could hide behind the fan, but it was just a Jake decoy. So I figured, hey, once these birds get close enough to figure out there's some jackass laying behind the decoys, they're not going to get in close enough for a shot for Jake. So I put this so much in the ground as the best I could. Couldn't get it any deeper. I probably got it maybe a half inch in the ground, but it's standing. So I'm hoping like hell this decoy stays up long enough for these birds to come in. So I belly crawl back to the blind without these birds seeing me. And they're coming. I mean, they're coming. They're beelining
for
the decoys. So I get behind the blind. I turn the camera on, start filming. Hell, they're at 30 yards at this point. And the fucking Jake decoy falls over. Jake decoy falls over. Me and Jake look at each other. We're like, well, fuck. There goes that. And after that, you know, they kept coming.
So they got in
about 15, which obviously everyone's thinking, oh, that's close. Well, it is. But they were kind of to our left. And there was a brush line to our left to where it wasn't easiest for Jake to make a shot.
I was going to have to expose myself. You know, those Newcomb blinds, they work really good. But if you know, we kind of got him set up with a V in the middle, so I was going to have to raise up really high, and they were going to, I guarantee you, not guarantee, because we had this happen, but they were interested enough to where I think I could have got away with movement, but I would have had to shoot them as they were clucking and kind of high-stepping out. You know, it would have been a lower percentage shot and a higher percentage of spooking the fuck out of them.
Right.
And I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, like we talked about, in all reality, you probably could have got one of them birds killed.
But I think so.
Here's what we didn't want to do. Knowing that those were the three birds that I had set my other clients up to hopefully kill and pull off a double.
They were headed that way, too.
They were headed towards them. So we're like, me and Jake talked about it. We said, listen, unless they come into the decoys and it's a slam dunk kill, there's no reason to mess these birds up for my other clients. So instead of taking a halfway reckless shot, it wouldn't have been reckless. I think you'd have killed one, but you know,
taking a marginal shot,
we decided to just let him walk off.
So, you know, we might have had to run after it or something. The other two would have been fucking traumatized.
If you'd have shot right there, probably my clients would have never got an opportunity on those birds. And it potentially messed up our plan for the day. So we let these birds walk off. They're not that spooked. They don't really know what the hell happened. They just know that a Jake decoy
something was off.
Fell over and it made them a little bit nervous. So they just kind of scared us. We let them go around us and they head straight towards my clients. I got set up on a blind up on the hill. So I text my clients and say, hey, some birds are headed to you. And so, you know, they're getting ready. Well, I think the first time they came in on them, they came in from behind him. Well, they were a little weirded out, so they came in, and my client's got a strutter. Look, they got a strutter up with a breeder hen.
Yeah.
Well, knowing that there was three birds, I told the clients, hey, put a strutter up. They ought to come in and attack it. There's three toms running together, so they ought to be pretty aggressive. Plus, these birds haven't, you know, they haven't had any pressure. They haven't hunted. So they come in. Well, after having the incident with the Jake falling over, they were a little bit sketched out. Well, they never would commit to the decoy, so they stayed back. They hung up behind them and just walked off. Well, after they walked off, they texted me and said, hey, it didn't work out. They got a little nervous. They just wouldn't commit to the decoy. So after they walked off, I told them, hey, it's probably best you guys go pull those decoys. So if they pass your blind again, headed back to roost this evening, you know, maybe you could just get a pass shot instead of them skirt the decoys on you guys. So a couple hours go by, me and Jake get repositioned, reset up for the evening hunt. And these toms, same three toms, come back to us. Well, of course, they're halfway sketched out. So me and Jake pretty much knew they weren't going to commit to a decoy or anything that day. So we pretty much wrote those birds off. And there was several other longbeards in the area. So we were like, well, we're hoping one of these other longbeards pop out where we can call in that have no influence on what happened. And so those three toms walk off again. Well, they go straight back. And they're headed back on their evening route back towards the roost. And
didn't they set up a hen?
No, they pulled everything.
Oh, they pulled. I thought you told them. Yeah, okay, never mind.
So they pulled all their decoys.
I couldn't remember if they pulled them or if they had a hen.
But like I said, they were set up on their natural path heading right, back to the roost. So right. Luckily, these birds come back by, and they, like I said, they heard them gobble. So they're getting ready. Well, they walk back by them. Well, Rodney, one that was hunting with the compound, birds walk by. He stops the bird, shoots it with the compound, hammers it. Bird runs off, but he knew the bird was hit good enough that it was probably just going to run off and die. Well, I guess his buddy was filming with the phone. They trade phones. His buddy grabs a shotgun with the birds. You know, they're off probably 35, 40 yards. And he pulls up a shotgun, shoots the one with a shotgun. Perfect. Doubled up. Well, text me and say, hey, we just pulled a double, but Rodney's bird that he shot with a bow ran off. So we'll let you know how it goes. Well,
shit. That's not what you want to hear.
Not what you want to hear, but we were hoping like hell that, you know, he hit this bird good and he just ran off and piled up somewhere and died. Well, you know, luck would have it, it worked out and he did hit it good and they ended up finding it. They gave it a little bit of time and walked in there and picked up a blood trail. They actually found quite a bit of blood and ended up finding him piled up underneath the tree dead. So it worked out. It worked out as we planned. Actually, not exactly as we planned. We planned on him coming in and attacking the decoys, but either way it worked out and those birds came back in on them and they were able to get a shot and doubled up, one with the compound, one with the shotgun, which made me and Jake feel better about him not taking that marginal shot earlier that morning, because they ended up getting a shot on those three birds. So anyways, we got them tagged out first day, so they're happy. They fly out the next morning. Me and Jake are obviously back after it with the recurve. So the next morning we get set up on a different farm, had a fresh bird.
Oh, this is a brutal one.
Yeah.
We had
a fresh bird. Well, we had been guiding hog hunters in this particular area, so we had a ground blind set up on the edge of the field, on the edge of this wheat field where these hogs have been coming out and hit this wheat. Well, you know, these turkeys walk past this blind every single day, so, you know, they don't think anything about it. Well, we go in there, so we get a little closer to the roost, and me and Jake talk about it, and we're like, well, let's set up on this point and try to cut these birds off. Off the roost, kind of a pinch point where these birds walk by every single day, right? We thought, well, hell, we'll cut them off. We'll cut them off before they get to the back end of the field. Well, so that's what we did. We set up, and these birds pitch down perfectly. Everything's going good. It's a tom with two hens. They start working their way to us. You know, he's strutting, gobbling, putting on a show. Everything's perfect. Well, when they get in closer, we can tell this tom's a little uneasy about the blinds. Yeah. You can just tell it's something new. You know, some birds ignore it. Sometimes I like to say they black out and they just go right into the decoy and they're oblivious of anything around them. Hell, sometimes you could throw up a ground blind in the middle of a wheat field and a tom will come in and black out and start fighting the decoy and has no idea, oblivious of anything around him. Well, this tom wasn't. He came in, he was a little bit uneasy about the decoy, or sorry, about the blind, but he was still just aggressive enough where he was going to come in and fight the Jake. So he comes in the decoy, like he's 10 or 12 yards.
Yeah.
But you could tell he's keeping an eye on the blind when he comes into the decoy. So Jake goes to draw, and when he does, this bird doesn't just do the alert clock and walk away to where Jake's still able to get a shot off like a bird typically would, this son of a bitch turns and hauls ass.
I never, you know, it was, what was so great and terrible about the whole thing. I mean, I ended up killing a bird, so it doesn't matter, but that was the most picture perfect. We had like the mountains in the background, this big wheat field. It's just beautiful. He pitches out with his two hands. He's over there strutting. He struts most of the way to us, you know. But again, they kind of skirt around the decoys at first. And the way, that was the only time we set up those Newcomb blinds in a not so advantageous way. And in that, I only had a shot at the decoys because there was two trees on either side of me. So I couldn't like, you know, I couldn't move to my left or my right and get a shot at that angle. So when they kind of skirt out and then they come back, he wants to come to that decoy and kick its ass. Like, he wants too bad, but he just doesn't like the blind. So he comes up and he's just standing right on the right side of that, and I can just see him, and he's kind of eyeballing us, but he's kind of looking at it, and he's kind of acting like he's gonna go, like he's going to walk off.
You could tell he wasn't going to give you a whole lot of time to get a shot.
He was going to try to walk away from it. You know what I mean? Like,
it was a now or never situation.
That's what I felt. And I felt like I was going to get that where he'd give me that split second to get drawn and shoot. But yeah, you're right. He went from fucking fight mode to hauling ass. And I mean, I don't regret doing it at all. Like, yeah.
Well, you know, like I said, me and Jake talked about it afterwards. In hindsight, 2020, we both agreed that, you know, obviously, you know, it's easy to look back on a situation and say you'd do it all differently. But we look back and we're like, well, shit, we should have set in the ground blind that they're used to walking by every single day that we use for hog hunters. And it'd have been perfectly fine. They would have never questioned the blind. He'd have came right in the decoy, and Jake probably would have smoked his ass.
It was stupid. When you asked me that first morning, I was like, I just want to be closer to the, like, my thought was, let's get closer. Like, that's stupid. That's stupidity. It's just, get closer to the roost. We should have just said, and the Newcomb blinds had been working. We just
got a little greedy.
I've had so many fucking people ask me what that half blind I'm using. It's a Newcomb blind. Just look it up. It's like NUKEM.
Yep.
And no, I don't get paid. I fucking don't even. I just ordered a couple. I just found out about them from Garrett. I'm gonna use them. They're great for like running and gunning.
They're badass running gun blind. They're easy to set up.
Did I just say run and gun? I'm gonna get a lot of shit over that one, bro.
Run and bow, whatever the hell you want to call it. Even moving around archery hunting, they're nice because you can set them up quickly and you can bow hunt out of them. Hell, as you've seen on Jake's video, hell, we shot that bird in Kansas, the eastern of Kansas, fighting the decoy at 10 yards with them. It worked out great. Obviously, it's not a blind you'd want to sit in all day because, you know, you could get caught off guard because they could come in from your back. If you were set up with brush behind you, you could set in all day. Shotgun hunting, no problem. But as a bow hunter, I think if you're going to set all day, you'd probably want to set a full pop-up blind just because you can't get caught off guard, you get a little more cover. But as far as, you know, quick setup blind, hell, they're badass.
It doesn't. It serves a purpose for
100%,
sure.
100%.
Throw it in your pack. But anyway, I only said that because I've had so many people. I'm like, Jesus Christ, you can see the fucking label on it when I video in that video.
Right.
Fucking pay attention, people. No, all right.
They're cool little blinds. So the next setup, that even.
That, yes.
So we leave that bird because we're like, well, hell, we spooked his ass. So he's not going to interact with the decoy for the next few days. So obviously, we knew that 4 or 5 days for him to settle down, we could probably kill him. But, you know, I was like, I told Jake, I said, hell, I'll kill him with a shotgun hunter.
Yeah.
And so we move on to another bird that hadn't been messed with, another big bird. Actually, I tried to kill him in youth season, called him in, and a youth hunter wasn't able to get on him as a young hunter. But he hadn't been hunted ever since. So we go back in there, and we set up for the evening hunt, and we get a blind set up, get the decoys out, and the evening hunt was just going textbook. All the hens are coming in and out of the decoys, all of them. We were just waiting on the tom to pop out into this field. We're in the corner of this field where all these hens kind of like to come out and hang out in the evening before they head to roost.
Yeah, just kind of wander around in there. It's fucking weird.
We had hens in and out of the decoys all evening.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there thinking, well, shit. If this tom pops out, it's gonna be perfect. He's gonna come over here. Hell, we got live hens in the decoys. They're being vocal. I mean, textbook situation. Well, as the evening goes on, I tell Jake, I said, hell, he ought to be popping out in the next hour, you know, working his way back to the roost. At that time, we hear a gunshot to blind. We're like, oh, shit. And immediately in my mind, I knew what happened. I knew, we're probably 400 or 500 yards from the property line. Well, at the time, I didn't even know the neighbors turkey hunted. You know, in the previous years, they've never turkey hunted up next door. Well, I guess they decided to this year. Because over on the property line, they have a blind set up, and they hammered that son of a bitch trying to. The bird was working his way back to us. Well, they killed him before he made it back to us. So I tell Jake, I was like, well, might as well load the blind up and get the hell out of here and go try to roost the bird, since the guy shot the bird we were after that night. I mean, at this point in time, we're just having shitty luck. So, we load the shit up. And haul ass to another farm I have to roost a bird for the next morning. So we make it over there, and me and another one of my guides we're sitting on both sides of the tree line trying to roost these birds. Well, we get a big tom roosted, and so we set up a game plan for the next morning. We're gonna get in there. We're gonna push the limit, try to get in close as we can to his roost, set up a ground blind. We had a good wind the next morning, so we figured we could get in there quickly and quietly in the dark and get this blind set up and set up on this bird. Well, we get in there the next morning. We get in there perfect, just like me and Jay talked about, and set up a ground blind, get the decoys out quietly, get settled in, start to break in daylight, and we're kind of noticing this bird ain't gobbling at all, which is it doesn't happen very often for a Rio. I mean, even on a shitty day, shitty weather, I mean, they're going to gobble at least a few times in the morning.
Yeah, it was calm,
typically.
Too.
And it was pretty calm, and so we're sitting there thinking, well, I mean, it was windy the day before, so I'm sitting there thinking, well, maybe because he got blown around so much, he's just not gobbling much. Or he ain't gobbling at all. So, you know, it gets lighter and lighter, and not only do we never hear this bird fly out of his roost, we never hear a gobble, nothing. And we didn't bump this bird off a roost. I mean, hell, no. I'm not oblivious to know when we bump a bird off the roost. I mean, hell, we pushed it before where if you bump a bird off the roost, we would have known it, 100%. It was calm.
Yeah.
We would have heard him fly out. We didn't bump this bird. So the only thing we could think of is this bird got bumped out of the roost the night before, or tree hopped on us. Whatever he did, he wasn't there.
Yeah.
So we set it for a couple hours that morning and have a couple bearded hens come in.
So many bearded hens.
Oh, shitload of bearded hens out there. But and he's nowhere to be found. So me and Jake talk about it. I said, well, there's no reason to waste our time on this bird. I mean, obviously we know he's in the area, but we don't got time to, you know, no reason to sit there and wait on one bird that we don't even know what the hell happened. Right? Whether the bird got spooked, whatever happened, he wasn't there. So we pack our shit up, and we're headed back to the farm where I knew I had a ton of longbirds. And me and Jake talked about it, and we thought, hey, you know what? We go over and put enough time in, we're going to get our opportunity. There's a lot of longbirds over there. Let's just go over there and put our time in. We had a lot of wind coming. It was windier and shit. So we had a lot of windy days coming. The rest of that day was supposed to be 30-mile-per-hour winds, and it was supposed to get hot, you know? It was supposed to get into low 90s. So we were sitting there talking, we're like, well, hopefully we can get it done this evening. If not, we got a solid game plan for the morning on an area where there've been a lot of longbirds in. So we go get set up that evening. It's hot, it's windy, not the best conditions to go sit at a ground blind, sweat your ass off, but that's what we did. So we go get set up in an area where, you know, a lot of birds have been moving through in the evening. And, you know, it started out a little slow, which we knew it would. It was hot, so a lot of these birds were shading early evening. They were just hanging out in the shade. Well, finally, it starts to cool down a little bit. These birds start moving around. Still about a 30-mile-per-hour wind. It was like a dust storm in there.
Yeah.
And we had seen a couple of hens, and as the evening went on, we got this right window open. Actually, we opened the right window just because it was so damn hot. We were trying to get some airflow in that blind, which I'm glad we did, because we were able to see off to the right. And I look up. I see a longbeard and a Jake working across the field away from us. So, and they hadn't seen the decoys or anything, so I yelp at them a few times to get their attention. Well, as soon as I get their attention, they look over, they see the decoys. Well, that changes everything. That longbeard goes into full strut, and he starts working their way to us. And I whisper to Jake, I said, hey, man, I think he's going to do it. I mean, he ain't running, but he's working his way in slow. So him and this Jake are working their way slow into the decoys. About that time, another tom pops out of the tree line, and he's starting to work his way in, too. I'm like, well, shit, this is working out perfect. Well, it was so windy, I was trying to film Jake. It was so damn windy, I'm holding down this damn line to keep it from blowing off. Hell, we got long stakes in the ground. It's still trying to pick its way off the ground. So I told Jake, I said, you know, screw the video. We don't want to jeopardize this bird coming in.
Never.
By the blind, you know, flapping around, trying to lift off the ground. So I'm holding the damn blind down, And this Tom's working his way in, strutting, and he comes right in, what, 10, 12 yards?
Yeah. Right to the decoys. He was a little more timid, but, you know, he walked right. I could just see his head. He was looking at the decoy, and that decoy in the wind just spins. It was perfect. It spins right away from him. And he was like, fuck you. And he takes a couple more steps towards it.
It made him look lively.
And I just smoked him.
Yeah, and once again, hell, all four birds, you 12er, and he once again 12ering this Rio. Smoked his ass. Bird takes off running. Even though the bird ran off, we knew he was fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, hammered him. So, bird runs off. Jake runs off with him. The other Tom kind of gets the hell out of there, too. But we kind of see him go down towards the creek, and there's a brush pile. We didn't actually see him go down, but we kind of knew the general area where he was at because the Jake was kind of circling the brush pile because he was laying on the ground in there. Well, we give him a little bit of time, and we walk over there, and he's piled up in there. I mean, he was almost dead when we got over there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was... You 12-ring them. So, I mean, obviously at this time, me and Jake are high-fiving, jacked up, because we finished the single-season slam with the recurve.
Yeah, it was pretty badass.
Hell of an accomplishment. It really is. And like I said, I mean, hell, some people struggle doing this with a shotgun in one season. And not only did you do it with the recurve, but hell, what's crazy is we talked about it is three out of the four species we killed with the recurve on the first day.
Yeah.
You know, and the first hunt. Well,
some of that was just luck, and then
pure luck.
And
but
yeah, I mean, that's
like
part
I said,
of
we
it.
Talked about it. You know, we were on the birds everywhere, but it helped. Whenever we do have a bird coming to the decoy, and Jake's 12's ringing,
12, capitalize, 12 ringing. Which is hard on a bird. I've always said turkeys and pigs are one of the hardest things to not necessarily kill, but find. You know what I mean?
Well, like especially with a bow, like we talked about before. With a when you're bow hunting turkeys, you have so much room for error. I mean,
so
you got
much.
You've got
for
such a small kill zone.
Yeah.
That you know, it's easy to screw up a shot. It really is. And I was thankful Jake made a hell of a lot of good shots because it made my job easy. You know, I just had to put the bird in front of him in the decoys, and he finished the job every time. So it made it easy. But hell, like I said, three out of the four birds we killed in one day with the recurve, which hell was awesome. And we were fired up. We even talked about it. We're like, well, this Rio is going to give us shit because it's been going way too smooth for us. Well. And it did a little bit, and a little bit had to do with other clients being in camp. I think if we weren't catering to the other clients in camp, we would have killed the first day.
Yeah.
But, you know, actually, we looking back at it, we're kind of happy they made us work for it a little bit because we had some badass hunts in between.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, I mean, we don't make this shit look too fucking easy.
But still, we got it done on day three, and shit, it was a hell of an adventure.
It was, dude. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Started in Florida, knocked the Osceola, then the Eastern, then to Merriam back home in Nebraska, and then finished it off with the Rio in Oklahoma. Man, it was awesome. And like I said, and then we mixed in the Axis and the Bunch.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then we get back after, so we
oh, yeah, finished that, so finish it up,
the,
yeah,
the,
yeah.
The rest of the story yesterday to add to our bizarre adventure we've had over the last week and a half... My dumbass, we got out of the truck yesterday and we're kind of gathering all of our shit up to go set up a blind, get settled in for the evening hunt. Well, I locked my damn keys in my truck like an idiot. And so I knew it was going to be an issue, but I told Jake, I said, hell, we'll worry about it, you know, after the hunt. Let's just go try to get this bird killed. So we killed out a little earlier than I thought we were going to that evening. So at this time, I'm getting a hold of Buddy, trying to see if anyone's got something to break into my truck to get my keys. Well, after no luck of that, I get a hold of AAA. I had AAA. I'm like, well, I told Jake, I said, hell, they've unlocked my truck in the past, so should be able to get them out here and unlock it. Well, it was a struggle that evening. They called me back after we get done taking pictures. We make it back to the truck, and we're just sitting in our gobbler lounger bullshitting. Well, it gets dark, and hell, an hour and a half, 2 hours go by, and we're still sitting in the dark by the truck waiting for this damn driver to show up. They call me about an hour and a half in and say, hey, we still don't have. We're sorry about this. Sorry about the delay, but we still don't have a driver. We can't find any drivers in your area to come unlock your truck. And I'm like, shit. So at this time, we're sitting there thinking, well, maybe I should have a buddy come pick me up or pick me and Jake up, and we'll just deal with this tomorrow morning. Well, finally, after probably an hour and a half, 2 hours, AAA called back and said, we found a driver. So he makes it out there about what 10 p.m.
Yeah.
probably 10 p.m. he makes it out there and unlocks the truck finally. And so we haul out back to camp. We're beat at this point in time. Oh, we're excited, geez, obviously, but we're tired. You know, we've been hard at it. And so we make it back to camp, eat dinner, and me and Jake were talking the way back to camp. He's like, you know what? He said, we ought to try to go kill a pig, top it off. You know, we have all my pig spots are baited up because we've had some pig hunters in. So I tell him, I said, hell, we'll check the cameras after we get done eating dinner. If we got some pigs on camera, we'll try to sneak in, make a stock. It was windy as hell, so I knew making a stock would be easy that night. We'll make a stock and try to kill a pig, top it off. So we eat dinner. It's probably, what, 11:30 at this point in time.
I was tired.
We're yawning. We're tired. Well, a couple of the spots we got cell cameras on, and we had some pigs in there. So we said, well, we got one spot. We got a perfect wind. It's only about 15, 20 minutes from camp. Let's go try it. So we head out, get all of our shit, go in there, sneak in, park the truck, make a stock in there. Get the wind in our face, and we stalk in, what, probably,
I don't know what, 50, 60 yards?
Yeah, we may have been 70 yards.
Yeah, 70 yards.
And we got a kill light over the bait pile, and we got there was a sow and some piglets in there, and there was one big boar.
Yeah.
Well, we stalk in and get Jake set up on the bog pot, and he just fucking smashes them. Double lungs this big boar, probably about 150-pound boar. He only runs 50, 60 yards, piles up in the brush, and we're high-fiving, fired up. That just honestly put the cherry on top for our trip.
Oh, yeah.
Took some hog meat back home with the axis and all the turkey and crappie and everything else.
Oh, man, it was an amazing trip. It was fun. It's time to go home, though. My little girl is fucking tearing my heart out. She's, the last few days, it's been a long one. Last week, they did good, but this week, she wants me home. She's been crying at night, so I'm like, God damn it, I gotta get this done so I can get home, you know? I mean, she's pretty used to me being gone, but it's been a bit, so. Now I'm excited to head home tomorrow, but, God, it was a great trip, dude. I can't believe I actually did my single season slam, and I wouldn't want to do it with anyone else. I appreciate you taking me and
oh shit, man, it's been a blast, bro.
The opportunities,
it's been an absolute blast.
It's been awesome.
I'm looking forward to the next one. Like I said, now me and Jake are actually currently headed to Kansas. This is where actually we left Jake's truck.
Yep.
We figured there's no reason to take two trucks around, so headed back to Kansas because I've got two more clients showing up tomorrow and then three more on Friday night, so I got five clients showing up this weekend. Luckily, shotgun hunters.
Yeah. Get them fucking bow hunters out of here.
Yeah, so shotgun hunters. So, yeah, we got five birds to kill this weekend, but now we got plenty of ground. So, me and my guys ought to be able to knock them out. So, we're getting there tonight, prepping for our next clients to turkey hunt, and then Jake's headed back home in the morning.
I tell you what, man. You live the life, dude. Keep fucking rocking. We're going to keep killing together. We got plenty of trips planned.
We got a lot more adventures ahead of us in the upcoming years. On how I'm looking forward to them, brother.
Absolutely,
we'll get
man.
To Kansas tonight. Have a crappie and turkey fry to celebrate our badass adventure and plan the next one, bro.
Hell yeah, man. Well, if you guys want to go on any species, he does rat, he does squirrel, rabbits, all the way up to fucking elk, moose, chupacabras, fucking everything. You hit up Garrett, he's the man. And I'm not saying that, I pay for this shit. Me and Garrett are buds, but I don't go to, he wouldn't expect me to go to his fucking house and wire it for free. Like, I'm not just bullshitting you guys, I pay for it, and he's worth it, and yeah. So go fuck yourselves, and get your asses back to work, you fuckheads.